Okay. We are in Parshat Pekudei, so I don't know if you realize this, but it's very rare that we actually get to speak about Parshat Pekudei. So you have to sit in the back so I can use a microphone. If you were sitting here, there would be light. You know, and if I said something bad, you would hear it. Oh, okay. I know. Fine. I hope that's better. So I'm not going to... I don't want to change the tradition of trying to avoid Parshat Pekudei. So I'm going to speak about something which really has to do with the whole building of the Mishkan, which, of course, is completed now. But it's something which is larger. And let's take a look at the first source, which at least is the beginning of the parsha. Eilu pekudei Mishkan, Mishkan ha'idut, asher pukad al pi Moshe, avodat ha'leviyim biyad Itamar ben Aaron ha'kohen. So over here, when it describes the building of it, it says what was done, and it starts off with Leviyim. Itamar, son of Aaron, he seems to be in charge of that work. Uvitzalel ben Uri ben Chur lemate Yehuda, so here he comes up as the second one. Asa et kol asher tziva Hashem et Moshe. He did everything that God commanded Moshe. The ito, and with him was Oholiav ben Achisamach lemate Dan, Charash b'choshev. So instead of translating every word right now, I will just say it in general terms. It sounds like the division of labor is such that Bezalel is the contractor, and it sounds as if Oholiav is actually the artisan who's doing the work. That seems to be that Bezalel is the one who's overall in charge of what's going on. But it sounds like the one who has the magic hands is Oholiav. Now, what intrigues me the most about this is something which, on a level of pshat, may be absolutely irrelevant. Which means it could be, if I ask myself, so why particularly either these two or these three, as it were, or these four? Because again, how did I get up from one to four? I can say two if I look at Bezalel and Oholiav. I can get to three if I throw Itamar into the mix. I can get to four if I throw Moshe into it as well. So I can ask myself, why were these chosen? And I can get to a very simple answer. And the simple answer is because these are the people who were best suited for whatever reason to do it. And if I were to settle on that answer, then we would have a very short shiur today. But it's possible, certainly within a midrashic level, and when one goes over to a Kabbalistic level, that they see this merger over here between these characters as being something which is far more significant, and that's what we're going to try to understand today. I'll say something which, as far as I know, nobody said, but just when I look at all four of them, so of course, and I think we've done this before a little bit, but when you get all four, then you have a combination, and you have to ask yourself, so where else do I see four people together? And of course the obvious answer is by Milchemet Amalek, where you have Yeshua down below who is fighting, and then up above you have Moshe being surrounded by Aharon and by Chur. So that particular mix, if I look over here, I do have Itamar ben Aharon, and therefore the replacement of Aharon as where I have Moshe, and I have Bezalel from Hur. And then the last one that I have is Oholiav, who comes from Dan, so then I have to ask myself, well, what would he have to do with Yeshua, and is there any kind of connection there? And of course the answer is yes, but that's why we would need to work a little bit harder to see what that connection is. But as I said, the simple pshat of everything going on today is simply these are the people who were best at what they did, and that's why they were chosen. Back in Perek Lamed Aleph, it describes, "Vayedibar Hashem Moshe Lemor, Re'ei Karati B'Shem Bezalel Ben Uri Ben Chur Lemate Yehuda." Ve'amale oto ruach elokim b'chokh b'tvuna v'dat uv'chol melacha. And I will fill him with this understanding, with wisdom, and so on, to do all of the work, which actually sounds like he's not the person who has these gifts necessarily, but rather God gives him these gifts. There is something which I discussed many, many years ago, and that is the correlation between Bezalel and between Shlomo. Because according to Chazal, actually it says very clearly that at this point Bezalel was right around Bar Mitzvah age. Because again, he's the grandson of Hur, who's a major character not all that long ago. So how old was Hur, or for that matter, how old is Bezalel? And they point that he was very young at this point. He was around 13 years old. And the other person who has very similar characteristics, who was very, very young, who also built, was Shlomo. Which means that and Shlomo, by the way, was the wisest of men. But how did Shlomo become the wisest of men? It's only after he has his dream, and that's what he prays for. Which means it's something which God gives him, and he gives him these gifts. And again, you could look linguistically between a comparison between Hur and between Shlomo. Where did Shlomo have his dream?
Mitzpeh.
Right, not Mitzpeh. Givon. It says Givon. He has it. We had a member of Knesset from the area, and when she went in to give her to take her allegiance or whatever you do and become, so I called her the night before and I told her that Shlomo prayed for wisdom and he came from this area, and she ended up giving that speech in the Knesset. It didn't work out well for her, but that's I didn't ask for credit. Why should I get credit? In Perek Lamed Vav, you like the. I should just tell you these stories. This would interest you much more, right? The Asa Bezalel, source 3. Again, we have the same kind of thing. I want to stay back in source 2, Perek Lamed Aleph. Vani pasuk vav ani hinei natati ito et oliav ben achisamach lamatedan uvelev kol chacham lev natati chochma. There's also room over here to compare the types of skills or the types of spirit that Bezalel had versus that Oholiab had. But in order to understand this properly, I want to go back to a pasuk which at first glance has absolutely nothing in the world to do anything what we're talking about. It's not even talking about any of the tribes that we're talking about. It's back in Perek Lamed Pasuk Chet. In Bereishit, which you do not have in front of you. I'll read you the pasuk. Vatomer Rachel says, Naftule Elokim Naftalti im Achoti.
Source 4.
I put the pasuk in? No, there's a commentary on that. Okay. Gam Yacholti, Vatikrashmo Naftali. Now, the word Naftali is not the easiest word over here, and I chose to use the commentary of the Rush, even though you can accuse me of unfairly just ignoring Rashi. Rashi's going to end up saying something very similar, but it's a little bit clearer over here in the Rush. Now, let's remember where we're up to. Because for me to take you back in the middle of Bereshit is a little unfair, but of course that's what you do when you're talking about the building of the Mishkan, because how much can you talk about the Mishkan? You have to find some other narrative. So, Leah just now had 4 children. And I can say it quickly, 4 children. Rachel, for lack of a better word, is jealous. Rachel then decides to, what's the word that they use today?
Surrogate.
I was going to say surrogate, I was going to say subcontract. Right? Isn't that what it's called? So she decides to subcontract and to have Bilhah have a child instead, and Bilhah succeeds and has a child. What's that child's name?
Dan.
Dan. Then she has a second child, and that second child is Naphtali. So that's where we're up to right now. We're up to Naphtali. So this is after Bilhah has her second child, and that's what. And again, where Rachel says, "Vatomer Rachel Naftuli Elokim Naftalti, im achoti, gam yocholti. But the question for Naftali. So the Rush writes here. Naftali, kim Naftali, im achoti, gam yocholti. Kasha, loshen yocholti, demashma shahaya rachel yocholet yoter mileya. I've succeeded, I've gone past my sister. Now that's a little difficult for her to say at this point, because again, if I want to be realistic, and if we do have this competition, and the competition is won by fertility, so over here, Leah still is winning, maybe, depending how you count, either 4-0 or 4-2. So how can she say that I've yacholti, I've been successful? And, okay, let's continue with what he says here. Kasha lo shen yacholti demash shayi l'rachel yacholet yoter mileya bivanim, regarding children. V'lo adayin lo hisiga l'cheshbon b'nei shel Leah. She hasn't caught up to the number that Leah has. And by the way, she never will. V'yesh lomer ta ha'inyan kachu ha'imahot ha'yunaviyot. Okay, so if you wanted someone, ever looking for one to say it black and white, something that the Gemara doesn't necessarily agree with, they were neviyot. V'omer Rachel ani yodat sha'at mithalelet u'mishtabechet b'cheresh chacham sheyatsa mimcha, mimech, mishevet Yehuda, shehu b'tzal ben Uri ben Hur, l'matei Yehuda. I know that you are proud of your descendant who's going to emerge, who's going to be B'tzalel. So basically over here the discussion, and this we're going to see this again and again today, basically moving through time, past, present, future, in terms of these tribes. But over here, Rachel's conversation with Leah has nothing to do with reality, nothing to do with what's going on in front of them. She goes, I see the pride that you have for your great-great-great-great-grandson. You know, mazel tov for you and your grandson, granddaughter, what do you have?
Granddaughter.
So mazel tov, you have a lot of nachat. But over here, I don't know how far in the future you see, but way. So you've celebrated her graduation from college. Good. Get ready to pay for it. So she's already celebrating. She goes to Leah, oh, I know that you have this descendant coming down the line. But kimokein atid letzet mimeni cheresh chacham shehu oliyav ben achi samach l'matei dan. She goes, I'm proud of my descendant. So over here, it's fascinating that over here, by the birth of Naftali, you can say, what does Naftali have to do with any of this? By the birth of Naftali, the Rush over here is bringing in this conversation regarding the competition. That's the first way that I would put it, competition between these two descendants that they're going to have, who will end up working together. Va'od, and he continues, Bevinyan Beit HaMikdash Rishon Yotzei Mimeinu Chacham Cheresh Kedechtiv Hu Ben Isha Almana Mishevet Naftali Ulefi She'amra Al Naftali Gam Yecholti Alayach. So what he's saying over here is that the Mishkan will be built by a combination of Bitzalel together with Oliav from Yehuda and from Dan. The first Beit HaMikdash will be built by a combination of Shlomo from David, from Yehuda, together with this fellow from Naftali. So therefore, Rachel is looking in the future and seeing these things and says, I could be just as proud as my descendants as you can be from yours. The way that Rashi says it is a little bit different. The way that Rashi says it is, he starts off quoting someone else. Menachem ben Sarok Pirshu, he brings an interpretation that he doesn't love. The word itself, Naftali or Naftali, what does it mean?
Crooked.
It means crooked. Crooked like a pretzel. So when something is crooked or like that, but he's saying no, it's something which is intertwined. That's how he's understanding first. Because something not straight, he's understanding the first, he's quoting from Menachem, is intertwined. Rashi does not love that interpretation. Because he then says, Vanima farsho, loshon akashu pitaltol, nit akashti, vihifratsti, tsirot, v'naftulim harbe l'makom, liyot shavela achoti. He understands it really from the language of prayer, which is the way that Unkelus explains it as well. I've been praying for equality to my sister. So the two different interpretations Rashi introduces is one is working together and one is conflict. If you look at the Datz Kanan in source number 5, which is also on this, This is from Tosfot, also on this verse. Naftali, Naftali, Kamo Naftali, Klomer, Tsar Gadol, Savalti, Machoti, but Tsarti, Koach, Lisvol, Yecholti, Adata. So the first thing is I have pain because of my sister. Second one, Devar Acha, Loshon, Ikeshu, Patal, Klomer, Akshut, Nit Akashti, Eitzel, Achoti, Shahiti, Akara, I was barren, Gam Yecholti, I've succeeded, May Atash, Yeshli, Banim, Kamote, now I've become equal to her. Not, by the way, in terms of number of children, but the fact that I have a child. Although this is by the second one, right? Devar Acha, Loshon, Tzamid, Patil, Klomer, Chiburin, Shoshem nitchabarti im achoti, mivnei achoti ati letzeit betzalel, shiyamalei ruach achma shenemar betzal ben uri ben chur lematei yuda, v'amalei ota ruach elokim, v'anid nitchabarti im achoti boto malacha adichtiv, v'ito oliyav ben ichisimach lematei dan. So over here, the way that the Dat Zakenim is understanding is that when Naftali is born, at least according to this last interpretation, that again, she sees prophetically, like we heard in the Rush, who's really come from the same school. And what she sees in the future is this merger together of Leah and Rachel, which by the way, I don't have to stress to you to what extent that is important, because you know the whole last third of Sefer Bereishit is when we're aware of a struggle between them, which eventually leads to Mechirat Yosef, which eventually leads to Galut Mitzrayim, which is basically how we start our story in Shmot. Which means, if I really need the introduction, how the story in Shmot begins? The story in Shmot begins because of Mechirat Yosef. And Mechirat Yosef begins because of the jealousy, hatred, however you want, between the children of Leah and the main child of Rachel. And now that I have some kind of merger, and of course what you're going to all tell me is, well, it's not as perfect of a merger as you would have liked, because if you were scripting this, what you would have written is that you would have put somebody from Yosef over here, which, by the way, I do have to stress again, that when we look at Mamalek, we have someone from Yosef, from Ephraim, Yehoshua, down below leading the actual physical battle, and you have this the spiritual support taking place on the mountain is between Moshe, Aaron, and Hur, all primary from Leah, which means Leah is above, Rachel is below, and they merge together. One is involved in spiritual, one is involved in physical. I don't know if you ever would have imagined that that's the way the division should or would take place. So there's a more perfect application of this principle. But over here, when we have the merger between, again, starting our parasha, it was Itamar ben Aharon. So here we have one from Levi. We then have Bezalel from Yehuda. And then we have Dan, which is from the surrogate of Rachel. So it's Rachel with one off, and the whole relationship between Yosef and the sons of the Shvachot, generally or specifically from Bilhah, is actually something which deserves a lot of attention. But over here, the way that these various commentaries are looking at the birth of Naftali as being significant, because eventually Naftali is going to symbolize the merger between what right now, when you look at it, when you look at the birth of either Dan or of Naftali, you can look at it symbolizing really jealousy. That's really what it is. I mean, why in the world is Rachel taking her servant and giving to Yaakov? It's not that Yaakov doesn't have any children. Remember, when Sarah gives Hagar to Avraham, it's because Avraham doesn't have any children, right? Avram doesn't have a child, so who's gonna be Avram's heir? So then Sarah does something which is, you know, incredibly unusual in terms of her outlook or, you know, generosity of, or can you imagine somebody caring about their spouse to that extent? Listen, you need a child, so I will make sure that you have a child. Over here, it's very, very different. Yaakov already has four children. Rachel's not doing it, so Yaakov should have an heir. Rachel's doing it, that she should have a baby in her arms, which isn't even hers. So again, I could just see the birth of Dan as something which represents division, fighting, jealousy, and it never really should work out properly because of that. And Naftali is simply the continuation of this. So therefore, it's so interesting to hear these commentaries saying, no, that Rachel is looking into the future. Again, either it represents the division or it represents the merger. Of course, what's the reality? The reality is both. It represents the division at that particular moment, But when you see how it works out eventually, when I'm able to now look into the future, that's really what Chazal are telling us. When I look into the future and I realize that this combination of Dan and Yehuda are the ones who are building the Mishkan, now I realize there's something holy about the entire family, there's something holy about this, what I thought was a division, and perhaps I have more of a dialectic taking place over here, of a thesis and an antithesis, and I need some kind of a merger of them together, and that creates something which is much greater. Okay, so that's all as a starting point. Now, if I want to get deeper into all of this, there's something which needs to be paid attention to, first of all, specifically about Yehuda and Dan, and we're going to see this in commentaries as we continue, but it's not just particularly within them, it's also within the whole process over here of these children entering into the world. And now, you don't know what I'm trying to say, let me say this very, very clearly. When you listen to the birth of the children of Leah, there is a name of God which is used consistently, and this culminates with Yehuda. Let me explain. Vayar Hashem, Yudke Vavke. What's Yudke Vavke? It's Midas Harachamim. God sees that she is hated. What does God then do? It says she has a child. Vatahar Leah Vatelid Ben Vatkreshmo Ruvain Ki Amra Ki Ra Hashem Ba'oni. God, compassion, has seen my suffering. She has another child, and she says, Kishama Hashem Kisnoa. God is heard. Again, Yud Kei Vav Kei. You get to the third child, and here it's ironic, if I'm not mistaken. The third child is born. What's his name?
Levi.
And here, God, for all the ones that you would have suspected that God is there, and Yud Kei Vav Kei is there, because the one who will be Kohanim and Levim and work in the Mishkan, the Beit HaMikdash, that one breaks the rule. God's name is not there in the name of Levi. It doesn't refer to God. She refers to her husband. The fourth one, again, Yudke Vavke. So what we find is Leah, when she names her children, uses the name of God, Yudke Vavke, for three out of the four. The fourth one, she doesn't use anything. But more importantly than that, the name Yehuda has actually the Yud Kei Vav Kei inside it. Yud Hei Vav Hei is right there in Yehuda's name. So when I say that Leah has this God sense, and specifically Yud Kei Vav Kei, which is Mida Harachamim, it seems to be, again, it could be that you never, if I didn't point this out, you never would have noticed this. You would have thought, as a starting point, that if anything, Rachel's the one who's full of compassion, and Leah's the one who's really stricter for whatever reason. But I'm just saying, in the name of the children that come out of Leah, the name Yudke Vavke is used consistently. By the way, this is where it stops. What happens then? Rachel is jealous. Yaakov gets upset. Then it says, then she agrees, she has a son. Rachel names the son, but Toma Rachel Danani Elokim. God is the judge, right? God has judged. Now, Elokim is Midat Hadin. Dan is Din, right? So what I'm pointing out now is that we have this Midat Haracham in perspective coming from Leah and only the first four, or if you're going to catch me on that, three out of the four. And on the other hand, we have a Midat Hadin coming in Dan, which now you realize that Dan is Midat Hadin, which just should be so clear to us. The next child born, Vatomer Rachel Naphtali Elokim. Again, it's Midat Hadin. The name of Din is used over here by both. Afterwards, by the way, when Leah has two more children. First, she has children with Zilpah, and then no names of God are used, if I'm not mistaken. Then she has more children, Yisachar and Zvulun. And over here, Leah switches to Midat Hadin with the naming there. So again, you can just track the names of God used within this whole section. And now something interesting should emerge. That I said before, it's some kind of a dialectic taking place over here. So I now realize that these two tribes, Yehuda and Dan, represent, first of all, one represents Midat HaDin, the other represents Midat HaRachamim. And the fact that the Mishkan merges from the two of them, it's the merger which is important. It's these two aspects of God coming together to create something which is holy. But that's something, as I said, you want to know what's pshat? Probably they were the best artisans. Okay, and just leave it at that. But now you realize that, you know, what Rashi and the others, Tosfot, were pointing out, that within these names, there was a sense of the future, and they were seeing them work together. I'm just taking that same perspective and just showing you that it's maybe a little deeper than they led on to, because it's actually this great representation of a merge between the two different aspects of God, which, by the way, of course, happens by creation as well. The creation also, you have the first chapter, the second chapter, and you eventually have the merge between Midat HaDin versus Midat Rachamim. So over here, that on some level, the Mishkan is going to represent the creation of the world itself should not come as the biggest surprise to us. Am I still with you all? I lost all of you already. Esther. Your holiday is coming.
Leah's children.
Source number 7. The Ibn Ezra quotes something which he rejects. I don't know why he quotes it, how he quotes it. I don't know why he rejects it either. But he does the opposite of what I just now did. Look what he does. Ibn Ezra quotes Rav Sadia Gaon, source 7, Vedaber. This is the verse that, for the first time, connects Bezalel and Eholiab. Vedaber, Amar HaGaon, again, if I'm not mistaken, of Sadia Gaon, I assume that's who he refers to. Amar HaGaon, Lama Nivcharu Bezalel Eholiab? V'hishiv, Ki Bezalel Mibnei Yehuda, Shem Shilu Yaakov Lagur Aryeh. He's compared to a lion. Gam Eholiab Mibnei Dan, Shem Shilu Moshe Lagur Aryeh. They're both compared to lions. Now, if you take a look, by Yaakov's brachot, if they are indeed brachot, to his children, Yehuda is described as a lion. When you go and you take a look at the brachot of Moshe, you'll find that Dan is compared to a lion. So he's saying over here, the merger between the two of them is exactly the opposite of what I said before. Not because they're different, but because they're really the same. The Aryeh tsar me achorav v'kacha haya habayit. And now he describes the physical form of what a lion looks like. Not that I would want to get that close to look. But he describes something physical about the way that the lion looks, narrow on one side, broader on the other, and he says that's what the bite looked like, which, by the way, is completely wrong when it comes to the Mishkan. The Mishkan was actually not exactly square, but it was rectangular. V'zed durash hadaresh ki betzalav eliyav lo banu habayit. He goes, that's very nice, but Ibn Ezra doesn't like this because ultimately he says they didn't build the Beit HaMikdash. What being described as a lion is the way the Beit HaMikdash, and by the way, the Beit HaMikdash is described also at times as Ariel. And the name lion is used connected to the Beit HaMikdash. V'rochav ha-mishkan sha'asu ha-yashaveh. V'ein tam l'she'elato ki nevchur b'vor sh'ol yibisroel kemoam. So what I haven't wanted to say the whole time. So you see the black and white, the Ibn Ezra, a very good rationalist, comes out, even though he liked astrology, but he's a very good rationalist, comes out and says, why are they chosen? Because they were the best people to do the job. That's all. Nothing else to talk about. Rabbeinu Bechaye, on the same place, more or less. Vani hine natati ito et oliav menechismaf lematedan. Amar Ravi Chanina, we're going to see this midrash inside in a moment, in source 10. Amar Ravi Chanina, Ein lecha gadol mishevet Yehuda, ve'ein lecha katan mishevet Dan. Shehoyim min halachiniyot, which most likely refers to the maidservant. Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu yavol izdaveglo, shelot hiya ruach gasa, shegadol ve'katan shavim lefnei Kadosh Baruch Hu. Hamishkan nase b'shneihem. So let's pause for a moment. What is he saying? He's saying that for the Mishkan to be a place which is going to be a spiritual place, it cannot be the result of some type of arrogance. It can't be the primary tribe, the important tribe, the man who will be king, which is really what Bezalel and Hur represent. It can't be that it comes from them, this important tribe of Leah, and you know, the importance of the tribe of Yehuda should not be missed upon us, even in the desert. And it's not just Hor, and it's not just Bezalel. When we look at the formation in the desert, Who is the leading tribe right there up front? It's Yehuda. Yehuda flanked by Yisachar and Zebulun. That is the first camp. They're the ones who describe this first. Right? Nachshon Amidadav is first. The whole midrash about Nachshon Amidadav jumping in first is used, again, if you're going to tell me that's what happened, we have a Misara, very good. But why is it being brought up? To explain why Yehuda is first in the formation. That's where the midrash is brought up. Why is Yehuda? What? And why his korban is first, why the formation is first, everything. Why are they first? Okay, it must be that Nachshon is first. So it's working backwards. There must be some reason they deserve this, but I'll say it again. When I look at the camp, the primary tribe, as much as you're going to want to tell me it's Levi, the primary tribe is actually Yehuda. Yes, it's true that Levi has all the good jobs, but Yehuda is the primary one. And by the way, if I think about the formation of the camp, I have what I'll describe right now as a north and south, for lack of a better term, but who's the one all the way on the furthest most point to the north? That's Yehuda. Who's the one furthest most to the south? That's Dan. Not only is Dan all the way to the south, they're the ones who, they're the Ma'asef Kol HaMachanot. They're the ones who gather up all of the stragglers, right? So what you have over here is the most important and the least important, and that's exactly what this Midrash is telling us. Or Rabbeinu Bechai quoted the Midrash. It's exactly what he's saying, is that why do we need this merger? Is that we're going to take the best and the worst. That's really what he's saying. The most important and the least important. The most prominent and the least prominent, and putting them together to know that all are equal. That this is a statement of equality. By the way, the other way of doing it would have taken two from the side and not from the north. Okay, so we won't get into geometry because I'll lose many of you, but you realize there were other ways of doing this. Now let's continue. And he says, "Amishkan nase b'shneihem, zemi shev Yehuda v'zemi shev Dan, va'af beit hamikdash b'shnei shvatim elu." By the way, we've already seen something which contradicts that. Who's the Beit HaMikdash? Hold on, what did we see before? Who's the Beit HaMikdash between? It was built by
Yehuda and Naphtali.
Yehuda and Naphtali, by Shlomo and someone from Naphtali. He says, no, Dan is there as well. You just didn't notice him. Why didn't you notice? What? By the Beit HaMikdash. Why didn't you notice him? Because you don't know Divrei HaYamim by heart.
So,
Shlomo Mishevet Yehuda, Vichira Mishevet Dan, Mitzad Imo. On the mother's side. Which means even though there was somebody before who we identified as being from Naphtali, that's true. Naphtali on the father's side, but Dan on the mother's side. So here you have somebody who is all over a Bilha child, which means the child who Rachel subcontracts, both the first and the second one. So the two of them are coming together. So it was also interesting in those midrashim that we saw earlier that Rachel sees the future of her child working together. And it says it on the pasuk of Naphtali that there is this merger together. Yes, there's this merger together of Naphtali and Naphtali and Dan, and that comes together with this descendant of Yehuda, and they end up building the Mishkan and the first Beit HaMikdash. Just if you want to see the pasuk over here, source 9, pasuk Gimel, Ben Isha min bnot Dan vaviv ish tzari yodei lasot bezav ukesem nachoch barbizel vanim veitzim v'akamanu v'techelet v'vut uvekamil lefateach kol pituach l'shov kol makshavot v'shitan lahem im chachmech v'chmei Adoni David Avicha. So again, he has Alamilus, right? He can do all of these things, but now you see he's specifically referred to as the son of a woman from Dan. So over here, when the Rabbeinu Bechaye, again, and he's quoting a midrash, when he's pointing and saying, oh, take a look, this child is actually from Dan and Naphtali, but Dan is there as well. Don't ignore Dan. The source for this is source number 10. And again, what was interesting is, this is a Medrash Rabbah. Yeah, so here is what was quoted from before, the strongest tribe and the weakest tribe. And then he also stresses that I have in bold, V'chein HaMikdash Shlomo Yehuda V'chiram Ben Isha Omanami Maten Naphtali. But now we understand that on her mother's side, on his mother's side, he's nonetheless from Dan as well. Look at source number 11. It goes in the same direction. Davar Acha V'tishvan Kol Malacha Atamotze Kishunasa Mishkan Shnei Shvatim Hayu Shutfim V'malachatan. They were partners. Which again goes back the partnership between Bezalel and Oliav is a significant enough partnership because this does represent. I'm going to say it again. It represents the exact place that we have the schism between Rachel and Leah, respectively. He continues and says, "V'chein a couple lines in v'chein b'lachad hamikdash shnei shvatim halalu yoshotfim v'yishlach hamelach Shlomo v'yikat et chiram ben almana hu mimated dan v'shlomo ben David shemi shifto shel Yehuda." In the Faneach Raza, in source 12, it actually takes the relationship between Rachel and Leah, again, going back on that same pasuk with Naphtali. Bishitvar dehayinu shenitchabarti chiburei Elohim im achvati Leah, me'al sheyolda shifchati bilha, banar rishon shehudan. T'kishem shayi b'malchut ha-mishkan b'tzal ben Uri ben Chor l'matei Yehuda mizarecha, kach haya ba'ozrav Eliyav ben Achim Samach, so over here, he's understanding this clearly. It's the merger together, and perhaps even of Rachel and Leah, which now creates this merger that will take place later. By the way, don't ignore that point. That's a very important point. You know, we all know that the second Beit HaMikdash is destroyed because of Sinat Chinam. What this is telling you is that the building of the Mishkan and the first Beit HaMikdash, the second Beit, all of the building of it is because of unity. The building of holiness is because of unity. So, of course, disunity is what ends up destroying it. That's the message which is really coming across over here. Now, what I told you earlier that the Ibn Ezra rejected from Rav Saadia Gaon, you're going to see now in source 13, it's actually a midrash, which is in a couple of places. L'dan achi Ezer ben Amishadai, l'fi shadan aviv na'ase ach li'Yehuda b'melechet ha'mishkan. That these two ended up merging and becoming brothers, as it were. Again, this is really a sign of unity. Now quotes the various sukkim about where they're from. V'chein Yaakov Amar, and going back to Yaakov's blessing, Dan yadin amo ke'achad shiftei Yisrael. Dan will judge his people like a tribe of Israel. By the way, that's very disturbing. What does it mean he's like a tribe of Israel? It's like you saying to Jack every time I see him. I say, Jack, your brother. We think of you like family. And he says every time, but I am family. I said, it's okay, but we think of you like family. But what does it mean? There's an insult here. He's saying, you know, Ke'achad shiftei Yisrael. He's like one of the tribes of Israel. So again, if you're going to tell me that Yaakov spent a lot of time in Southern California and he's got like in every sentence, so then it's completely understandable. Otherwise, the Ke'achad is a little difficult over here. So over here, the Midrash says, Ke'achad shiftei Yisrael, Kimiyuchad shebishvatim. Yaakov is saying to Dan, who on certain levels is going to be the most insignificant, you are like the most significant one. V'zeh Yehuda, l'kach nikra ben ami Shaddai, going back to the name over here of this nasi, Shadan imo ki Yehuda. V'chein at motzi k'shem shenikra Yehuda aryeh, ken dan nikra aryeh. V'chein nikra nasi shifto achi Ezer ben ami Shaddai. So I'm not going to go into the whole interpretation of what they're trying to explain the name means, but this idea of both of them calling Aryeh, and therefore they're working together and building the Mishkan, as I said, what Ibn Ezra just rejects out of hand, over here you see it comes from an early rabbinic source. Now, what?
I say he rejects his pshat.
Yeah, yeah. And he rejects his pshat mainly because it doesn't fit, but it's the other part of it that didn't fit in terms of the shape of the lion. The Zohar in source 14, when it describes the building of the Mishkan, it writes, "Ubitzal ben Uri ben Chor l'matei Yehuda da, ihu misitra di yamine, v'ito oliav ihu misitra di smole, u'mishkana misitra di yamine misuli etkam v'et avru Moshe habibinahu ukinla." That you have over here Yehuda coming, or if you will, Bitzalo coming from the right side, and you have Oliav from Dan on the left side. Why is he saying this? Where did the Zohar get this from? By the way, this is a Zohar which I didn't know it was there, but I looked for it because it was completely predictable. It had to say this. Ah, good. Hold that for a second. That's the second one. And Yehuda is Rachamim. So over here, the names Yehuda and Dan, as I said before, it's not just the names; it's the whole, you know, birthing process. It's the whole chapter really, which takes you over here. Of course, the Zohar had to say this. Now you can ask a question, which I always ask, and I said I know the answer to it, but no one knows the answer. When it says that that Moshe was up on the mountain and his arms were being held up, so I always ask, so who held which arm? So I think you can say based upon this that Yehuda holds up the right hand, which may be a little bit swear because Levi's the left hand, but Levi doesn't have the name Yudke Vavke connected with him. It doesn't happen. As much as you would suspect that Aaron is the Kohen Gadol, which he's not at that point, but in potential, but still, if anything, you would have evidence over here that the one who holds the right hand would actually be Hur. The one who holds the left hand would be Aaron. But again, when I talked about the right and left, you see that now. The Zohar picked up on that. But as I said, just to make you all feel inadequate, this was completely predictable. This is something which we all should have known was coming. And
does that mean though that the Yav is the left though?
Because it's Midr Hadin.
And he wasn't even up there.
Correct.
I'm saying even...
Correct. I'm saying, which is actually, his Shevet isn't there, but the person who's going to be closest associated will be Ephraim, still coming from Rachel, and he's going to be down low fighting. That's why he's doing the physical fight. And Yehuda is helping Moshe lift up his hand for this, get chesed, to get rachamim, compassion from God, in order to be victorious. So as I'm saying, this division, which works out, I said it before as well, it does not work out precisely with the building of the Mishkan as it does with the fight against Amalek, even though there is a certain connection. By the way, I owe you a Ramban from last week. What you were having trouble with is a Ramban that actually said what I wanted to say. So I'll show it to you later. Right, let's look at Rabbeinu Bachaya in Source 15. Ukishem Shiskir Shem Elokim B'chol Maaseh B'Reishit B'Achar Shem HaMiyuchad, right, Din and Rachamim by creation, Kenegdo Tinsa B'Mishkan, you're going to find the same thing by the Mishkan, and at the very end of this Rabbeinu Bachai, he writes, Ukishem Sh'olam Nivra B'Shtei Midot Midat Racham Midat Adin, Kenegdo HaMishkan Naaseh B'Shnei Umanim, B'Tzal Mishevet Yehuda, Kenegdo Hashem HaMiyuchad Yudke Vavke, Va'Oliyav Mishevet Dan, Kenegdo Midat Adin. So again, I'm saying that clearly, that this is all that we should have anticipated, predicted. So he says this very clearly. What, you didn't predict this? You didn't predict this? Clearly, should be here. Over here, Rabbeinu Bachai also brings that which the Ibn Ezra didn't like. V'mikdash ha'yadom ala aryeh, shekein matzinu ha'ichal tzar me'ocharav, rachav melofanav, v'dom ala aryeh, kidichtiv havei ariel, ariel, kiryat chana David. So we see over here that the Beit HaMikdash as well is compared to a lion. Okay, let me get now to one last thing for today. Don't get excited, we probably won't end early, but one last point. Look at this midrash in Source 17, Bereshit Rabbatai. Dal, the lowest of all the tribes, the Shevet Dan. Shloya Yerud Bikol HaShvatim Mishevet Dan. By the way, are you getting tired of this, that Dan keeps on getting pushed off and insulted? Yeah, right? Okay, good. Right, Umachud Beit HaMikdash, in the end of the fourth line. Where it's underlined now. V'chein b'mashiach, we're going to find also when Mashiach comes, aviv miYehuda v'imo midan. So, again, I don't know how much you predicted that coming, but he's saying that, no, this merger ultimately is the key to redemption. The merger between Din and Rachamim, the merger between Yehuda and Dan is actually, and one is the mother and one is the father, and you can figure out which one is Chesed and which one is Din, who does the discipline. Shelakach nikra Yehuda v'dan gur aryeh. Shemashiach yotzei mibein shneihem. Right, Mashiach is going to come from the two. V'chein amar Yaakov, shemashiach yotzei midan. Shneamar dan yadin amo ke'echad. So that same verse that we saw before over here, it's saying, Zeh Mashiach. Shatid ladun kishakadosh baruch hu nikra echad. Dan yadin amo ke'echad shiftei Yisrael. When God is manifest, God will judge, the day of judgment will come. Who's leading the line there? Dan is. And you say, hold it. Here's Dan, our forgotten tribe, which suddenly seems so prominent. Mahu Dan v'lo ri'i'a u'shmi'a, kach Mashiach sh'ne'mar v'lo l'mar'eh enav. Now this is very, very strange. It went in and told us, hold it, there's this other element that we're not necessarily familiar with, saying that Mashiach is somebody who will be able to judge, and Mashiach's ability to judge transcends the senses as we normally would understand them. So we didn't really need all of Source 18. Source 18 is where the Rambam discusses Mashiach, and he discusses how Rabbi Akiva is a supporter, or was a supporter, of Bar Kokhba. At the very, very end there it says, but what happened to Bar Kokhba? It says that he failed, he died, so therefore it was understood that he wasn't. And the Ravid over, and by the way, what you don't know, as the Rambam is doing all this, the Rambam is actually quoting Yerushalmi. This whole thing the Rambam is really quoting Yerushalmi, including Rabbi Akiva's support of Bar Kokhba, is not mentioned in the Bavli, it's only mentioned in Yerushalmi. It could be hinted at in the Bavli, but it's said clearly in Yerushalmi. The Bavli, on the other hand, says something else about Bar Kokhba, that if you didn't know it, then I apologize. I don't know if I apologize for telling you, I apologize for not knowing it, but at the very end, the Ravid says, Omer Avram, Valo ben Kazi Bahaya Omer, Anuhu Malka Mashiach. Didn't he say, Amashiach? Ushocha Chachamim Levadko, and the rabbis went to search, Imorach Vada'in, Olo, Vikivan Zolo, Ovid Hachi Katluhu. They wanted to check if he could judge by the sense of smell. And when they saw that he couldn't, they killed him. They said, hold it, we killed Bar Kokhba. So look, take a look, the Ravid's quoting the Gemara, the Bavli, Source 19. Mashiach, the Tivanocha of Ruach Hashem, Ruach Chachma, Ubina, Ruach Eitz of Gvur, Ruach Dat, Vyirat Hashem. By the way, what does all those skills remind you of? All of those skills remind you of Bezalel and Shlomo, but also to an extent, who's the one who helps along the way? It's also Oliyav, to an extent. This is what Amar Rabbi Alexandri, Melamed Shehitino Mitzot V'Yisurin Kirechayim, skipping this, Rabbi Amar Dimorach Vada'in. He's able to judge by smell. As it says, v'lo l'mara enav yishpot, he will judge not by his eyes, v'shafet b'tzedek dalim v'chiyach m'mishur l'inui aretz. Berkozi b'malach tratin shnin upalga, he ruled for 3.5 years, amul rabbanon on the Mashiach. He said to the rabbis, I am the Messiah. Amru lo b'mashiach k'tiv t'morach v'da'in. It says regarding Mashiach that he can judge by his sense, or sense of smell. Nachzi anan imorach vadayin. We will test him and look and see, can he judge by smell? Kevin de chaziyu de lo morach vadayin. When they saw that he couldn't katlu, they killed him. So that's the tradition in the Bavli. Whether it means they actually physically killed him, or whether it means they withdrew support for him, whether it means that the religious support was no longer there, all of that, you can decide what you want. Rashi here explains, Rava Amar, my berichu demar kovim shemariach ba'adam v'shofet b'yodeya miha chayav shenemar, and so on. He goes, the person that Mashiach should be able to judge by the sense of smell. Now, I want you to think a little bit. Naomi said before in passing something which is correct, that when it comes to Dan, the way that the tribe worked out, it wasn't necessarily all that successful. Anybody not familiar with this, take a look in Sefer Shoftim in the 18th chapter, look at the whole story of Pesel Micha, and look how Dan was not necessarily the land they were supposed to be in. I do want to point out another thing. Dan, I said they represent the left, that's me, that's me. When you're in Israel, I think we've discussed this at least once. The way that you face is east. We face Mizrah. Therefore, the right is the south, and therefore, what's a country called all the way south? Yemen, Yamin, Taimana. That's all the way to the right. If that's the case, how would you describe the tribe which is furthest most to the north? So that is either Tzafon, if you're using that kind of map, or it's the left. When we say Me Atzfon Tiftach Hara'ah, that bad things happen from the north, so now you can decide who we're referring to. those of you who are more interested in wars coming from the outside and so on, so therefore it's the Assyrians and others who are coming from the north, and therefore the evil comes, and that's where we are vulnerable, both in Jerusalem as well. The way that Jerusalem is built, we're also vulnerable when it comes to from the north. My tour guides over here will agree with me on this. We are vulnerable, so therefore the microcosm is Jerusalem. The trouble is from the north. In the land of Israel, the trouble is from the north. You're a little bit more protected in the south. So the trouble comes from the north, but now also within the tribes, the trouble comes from the north, and that's the small, and that's Dan, which is the furthest. And they weren't happy there, and whether they actually conquered it or didn't conquer it, but they decided that there was another place they liked instead, and they decided that they wanted to be a little bit more local. And I guess they didn't have Kishesh then, so they decided that they were going to take over some land over here. So it's true that, and you have idolatry. You also have a merger there, which is very interesting, because they end up finding a Levi to become their Kohen, and that Levi, the suspicion is that he's a grandson of Moshe. I mean, that's what it seems to be. And they end up having this alternative place. At the same time that the temple's in Shiloh, or the Mishkan's in Shiloh, you have Dan leaving, and later on Yeruvam from Yosef also leaving, which means part of the spiritual DNA of Rachel's children, or surrogate children, is you have this potential for division. The potential for division is them being rejected because of issues of jealousy, and the potential of division is also they finally decide that we're too independent and we don't need you. But you have this both in terms of your Abam, and you have this also with him Dan. So all of that is here as well. Now, having said all that, I want to go back a step. Who's the most famous son of Dan? Yeah. Why is he the most famous son of Dan? Son of Dan.
He only had one.
Correct. Correct, that's the answer. Dan only had one son. And his son's name is? Hushim. Hushim, son of Dan. You all know the story about Hushim.
No.
Yes, you all know the story about Hushim. Hushim was the one that when it was time to bury Yaakov, we have a whole fight taking place over there. Naphtali is swift. He goes, by the way, here you have Naphtali and Dan standing out. B'nai Bilhah are the ones who stand out by that funeral. What happens then? What happens is this: Esav shows up and says, you know, it's my land, and Yaakov has the birthright, so that Naphtali goes running back to Egypt to go and bring back the birthright. That's what the Midrash says. Meanwhile, Hushim ben Dan is standing there, and what's the problem?
He's deaf.
What does the word Hush mean?
Senses.
So Hushim ben Dan is actually, we're looking at him and saying, well, he's lacking a sense. What sense is he lacking? So it's very funny his name is Hushim, because if he's lacking, then how can, why is his name Hushim? So hold on to that for a second, because this is interesting. But instead, what does he do? He's Hushim ben Dan. So how does he judge? He judges based on whatever senses he has. So what is he judging based on?
Smell.
He's judging based on smell. He's judging based on smell. And therefore, he decides that Esav is guilty and Yaakov is right, and therefore Hushim ben Dan is the one who metes out judgment, and he's the one who punishes him. I don't know if you've noticed this, but Hushim is an anagram. It's an anagram of Mashiach. Hushim, I'll say it again. Hushim is an anagram of Mashiach. So over here, what we find, this whole Gemara over here, this Bar Kokhba and Chush, and the ability of Mashiach by smell and so on, that's something where we see it for the first time, somebody who he's able to judge by his, doesn't smell right. Something. Now you could say he sees it, and again, the way that we always hear this story is that he's confused.
You tell the story, I never know the story.
The story again is that Esav shows up and says, I want to be buried by the Maharat Machpelah, and he's standing there, and Yaakov's dead body is there, and they want to bury Yaakov. They send Naphtali back to go get the deed. In the meantime, Hushim gets upset and sees this guy over, and he pulls out a sword, and he chops the whole story of Esav's head being chopped off and rolling into it. Hushim ben Dan is the one who chops off Esav's head. He chops off his head, and he says, who is this guy who's stopping my grandfather's funeral? And we always interpret it that he has a diminished capacity, he has a lack of understanding, he doesn't know what's going on, and I'm just pointing out, maybe he knows what's going on far better than we thought was going on. Don't quote me now of being overly military, you're all going to go to war and blame me, and so on. It's okay. But over here, I'm just pointing out, when we read that midrash by itself, it sounds like he is somewhat confused, and Hushim, ironically, is lacking some kind of a sense, because he can't hear. And now, when we hear that there's this aspect of Mashiach, the aspect of Mashiach is that he's going to be able to have an increased ability of smell to the point he can judge, dan, din, he can judge with smell. Somebody from Yehuda can judge from sound. Now you go back and say, hold on, what was that we just saw before? That Mashiach is going to have his mother from dan. So the ability to smell is coming from dan. The ability of smell is coming from Hushim. And Hushim, I'm going to say to you again, is the way that it's spelled, is actually the exact same letters. Hushim is an anagram. It's the same letters as Mashiach over here. It's, if you want to say it's Mashiach mixed up, you can say anything you want. But it is the same letters as Mashiach. Now, keeping that in mind, you look at the Arizal in source 21, Oliav. Why is Oliav chosen? L'fisha ho Yisrael atidim liot ovdim egel achash asu Yeravam bidan. That Dan is going to, it's not going to work out well, so therefore we need this refuah l'makah. We need that Oliav is going to build something holy because of what Dan is going to mess up later on. L'chapelo to'olav anshetid liot bidan. Bidan ki mitzalel ha'ya misod shem havaya. Again, the Arizal understood what I pointed out from the beginning. That Yehuda, Bezalel, comes from the secret of the name Yud Kei Vav Kei. Ulechein Degel Nachan Yehuda Kadma Mizracha. Therefore, it is most forward. Most forward is in, at least in the desert, is Mizrach. I'm skipping a little bit. Oliav, Shabbam Yishevet Dan, Shehuma Asaf Kol HaMachanot, which, by the way, is therefore susceptible of idolatry, because the idolatry is gathering everything together, all kinds of forces together. Ula atid Mashiach mi Yehuda v'saria, you may never have heard before, mishevet dan kinizkar v'parshat Balak. Of course, when the Arizal quotes Parshat Balak, he's of course referring to the Zohar in Parshat Balak. Because if you look at Parshat Balak, you may not find this, and that is source number 2, source 22, where it says, second line from the end, da. Saria dizmin lemithi bahadi Mashiach de Ephraim, that he is going to be at the time of Mashiach of Ephraim, the Iuhavi Meshifta de Dan. He's going to be from Dan. And again, it's talking about this merger together, but what's interesting, the way the Arizal quoting the Zohar is saying it, that you're going to have a merger of Mashiach ben Yosef is going to have from Ephraim and Dan, which is from Rachel and Bilhah. The merger there is going to come together. And Mashiach ben David, we saw before, is going to come from Yehuda and from Dan. Which therefore it ends up being that our least significant tribe, somebody who we wouldn't have paid any attention to, Dan, especially because Pesach Micha and the way they mess up and so on and so forth, we end up finding that when it comes to Mashiach, we find that Dan is there by both Mashiachs, both Mashiach ben Yosef and Mashiach ben David, there as a right-hand man, in terms of Mashiach ben Yosef, but even more significantly, when it comes to Mashiach ben David, not only is we're told his mother comes from Dan, I'm saying it's more than that. It's even this Hushim ben Dan we find right over here. So that now we look back, and I go back all the way to the beginning again. So we have the Mishkan is being built by Bezalel and by Oliav, and I could say that Pshat is that it's just that these were the two most talented people in terms of building, but now we're finding, even if that is the case, that spiritually these tribes as well, not only did they build the Mishkan, these are the tribes that built the first Beit HaMikdash, and now we realize that these are the tribes who are also going to be involved in the end of the Messianic Age.